Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. In his final show before the summer break, Andrew Marr sat down with the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond. With the results of the Conservative leadership contest to be announced this Tuesday, Hammond said that he was prepared to jump ship before he was pushed.
Do you think you're going to be sacked?
No, I'm sure I'm not going to be sacked because I'm going to resign before we get to that point. I intend...
Really?
Assuming Boris Johnson becomes the next Prime Minister, I understand that his conditions for serving in his government would include accepting a no-deal exit on the 31st of October. That is not something I could ever sign up to. It's very important that a Prime Minister is able to have a Chancellor who is closely aligned with him in terms of policy, and I therefore intend to resign to Theresa May before she goes to the palace to tender her own resignation on Wednesday.
I can never remember a Chancellor of the Exchequer, or indeed another senior minister, announcing his resignation live on national television. A moment, I suppose.
But can I ask? It's a first, Andrew.
Can I ask you, when it comes to Theresa May's final Prime Minister's questions on Wednesday, will you be sitting on the front bench or the back benches?
I'll be sitting on the front bench. I intend to resign after Prime Minister's questions, before the Prime Minister goes to the palace.
And you mentioned Boris Johnson now, but what about Jeremy Hunt? Because he could possibly surprise everybody and win this too. Same applies?
Well, that might be more complicated because Jeremy's position is more nuanced and I haven't heard him express clearly a requirement for a sort of loyalty pledge around the 31st of October no deal exit. But look, all the polling, all the bookmakers suggest that Boris Johnson will win. The question is by how much? I think that is what is likely to happen and I'm making my plans accordingly. But of course, I'll wait until Tuesday to see for sure.
We can probably gather you're not Boris Johnson's biggest supporter, perhaps.
Well, look, it's nothing personal. I've always got on very well with Boris and I find him a very engaging character. And actually, beyond the Brexit question, I don't have major policy disagreements with him. He's a middle-of-the-road conservative, a liberal conservative, I would say. So it's simply about a disagreement on Brexit policy. And I cannot accept the idea of leaving with no deal on October 31st.
Marr also spoke to the Irish Foreign Minister, Simon Coveney. Coveney said the incoming government should not expect too much to change ahead of the 31st of October.
The new British Prime Minister who comes to the EU and to Ireland and says the backstop is dead, we want to tear up the withdrawal agreement. In those circumstances, there's barely any point in talking. Is the negotiation
still to be had? I think if the approach of the new British Prime Minister is that they're going to tear up the withdrawal agreement, then I think we're in trouble. I think we're all in trouble, quite frankly, because that's a little bit like saying either give me what I want or I'm going to burn the house down for everybody. The EU, I think, has made it very clear that we want to engage with a new British Prime Minister. We want to avoid a no-deal Brexit. But the solutions that have been put in place to do that haven't changed. And just because a new British Prime Minister says they have to change doesn't mean that the EU collectively will respond to that by changing the approach of the last 3 years. I think there would be a fundamental unfairness also in offering an entirely different deal to a new British Prime Minister than the one that was negotiated with the previous Prime Minister in good faith, which involved compromise on all sides.
Sure, but there's an indication on the front page of the Sunday Times that yourself and others have been talking to the Boris Johnson campaign and don't let the others, and that there is some possible alternative way forward, some area for compromise. Is that true, and what is it?
Well, I think if you listen to the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, this week, I think she's also focusing on the kind of things that we would like to focus on. And I know Michel Barnier would also like to focus on, and I was with him this week for a couple of hours. If a new British Prime Minister decides they want to change the future relationship ambition between the UK and the EU, then certainly we hope that the backstop that many in the UK don't seem to like can be avoided.
Former Tory leader Ian Duncan-Smith has criticised the government's actions in dealing with the recent hostilities in the Persian Gulf, where a UK-flagged oil tanker has been seized by Iranian forces.
I think there are genuine questions to be raised right now about the British government's behaviour. I say this as a supporter of the government. The fact is that we had seized an Iranian tanker. If something didn't send an alarm signal that we needed to have serious assets or protection and convoying of our vessels in that area, then I want to know why not. And I understand, and I understand this from reasonable sources, that Washington had offered the UK government, even in the event that they haven't quite agreed an allied position to this, to use US assets to support British shipping, and they were not taken up at the point. And I want to know why, with only one ship as it appears there, and no accelerated attempted assets, this is a major failure, and the government has to answer this charge very quickly indeed.
However, the Defence Minister Tobias Elwood told Sophie Ridge that the Royal Navy was overstretched.
Why weren't these ships protected?
Well, we have a number of vessels, three or four vessels, going through 100 nautical miles of waterway every single day. It's not just us, but the international community is there as well. It isn't possible simply to escort each individual vessel.
But there's been talk, for example, of a scheme with the US to try and guard vessels through the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, why aren't we looking at
that? Yes, and that actually is what's happening. But let's place into context. This has been a sudden spike in activity, in threat, that's ratcheted up in the last few weeks itself. And absolutely, it takes time to respond there. We are sending an additional Type 45 destroyer there. There's also an RFA support ship that's coming, so we can actually replenish at sea. We are absolutely committed to providing a military presence in the Middle East and keeping these straits open. If we want to continue playing a role on the international stage, bearing in mind that threats are changing, all happening just beneath the threshold of all-out war, then we must invest more in our defence, including our Royal Navy. Our Royal Navy is too small to manage our interests across the globe if that's our future intentions, and that's something the next Prime Minister will need to recognise.
Ridge also spoke to the Shadow Justice Secretary Richard Bergen. The conversation turned to Ali Milani, the Labour candidate standing against Boris Johnson, who was found to have posted anti-Semitic tweets as a teenager. Bergen came to his defence.
He tweeted that Israel has no right to exist. He called Piers Morgan a Zionist, and he wrote, "It will cost you a pound, hashtag Jew." Why are you supporting someone who said those things?
Well, quite rightly, he's apologised for those tweets. And those tweets that are disgraceful that he did when he was a teenager. He's been on a programme of learning since then. He, in fact, went to Auschwitz to learn more about where prejudice comes from and where prejudice against the Jewish community can lead. So he sent those messages, those tweets, as a teenager. They were wrong. He's fully apologised for them. And I'm looking forward to supporting him today, because if we're going to tackle racism, we have got to accept and we've got to push education for people.
You know, I understand what you're saying, that he sent the tweets when he was a teenager, that he's tried to reach out to the Jewish community since. But at the same time, when Labour is trying to dampen down accusations that it is not taking anti-Semitism seriously, surely you can find candidates in high-profile seats who haven't made offensive comments about Jewish people in the past.
I don't think he should be prevented from being a Labour candidate because of tweets that he's apologised for that he sent when he was a teenager. I'm sure that there's plenty of things that Boris Johnson did as a teenager, which, if you applied that rule, would rule him out from being Prime Minister. In fact, there's plenty of things that Boris Johnson has said and written more recently, including whilst he was an MP, including whilst he was Mayor of London, including whilst he's in the running to become Prime Minister, which actually render him unacceptable and unsuitable to become Prime Minister.
And finally, the Brexit Secretary Stephen Barclay has rejected a Treasury forecast that projected the UK economy could lose up to £90 billion as a result of a no-deal Brexit.
Is that a price worth paying?
Well, the figure you quote relates to a Treasury forecast for 2035, a full 15 years after the end of the implementation period. And it also assumes that the government would take absolutely no action in response to a new deal. Well, as the Chancellor knows, and as I know, there are teams currently working in the Treasury on exactly what options we will take if we were in the position of a no deal outcome. So those teams wouldn't be working in the way they are if the intention of the government was not to take action. So there is a forecast there. There's a load of forecasts that have been put out in recent weeks. The reality is a no deal would be disruptive, but we've got over 300 teams across Whitehall working on our preparations, whilst it remains our priority to secure a deal if the EU are willing to move on that.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and we also have a special offer. You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for just £12, and you'll receive a free Amazon voucher worth £20. Just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Evening Blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.